It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, once and for all, is light or moderate drinking healthy for us? A new analysis of more than 100 studies says no. A Wisconsin public health expert breaks down the new research. But first, Susanna Michaels joins us now because it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions, and it's your gift of any amount that makes these conversations possible. Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. That's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important. Hey, Susanna.
Hey, Rob. And I am so looking forward to that next topic. And I'm also super excited to let your listeners know that the Public Media Giving Days match that we had for these past 2 days, up to $60,000, was met thanks to an outpouring of support from our new and returning members. Thank you so much. This is great news because listener support is the largest source of funding for the WPR programs that we all rely on.
Not too much time left in this drive, so let's keep up that momentum. Our goal is to get 15 gifts this hour, and we'll meet that goal one donation at a time. Let's start with yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, we are called Wisconsin Public Radio, and you have to ask, what does public radio mean? Well, public radio means that we are listener-supported radio.
Yeah, we do appreciate business contributions and federal and state tax dollars, but listener support is the largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Your contribution of any amount really matters at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the drive team is always coming up with great incentives. And this time they've really landed on one, I think. We've got this new WPR glass tumbler. You know, you can drink your morning orange juice out of it or an evening cocktail. It is going to be your new go-to. It's a handsome, elegant glass, and it's yours for a gift of $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to WPR, you're not alone. You might be alone in your car, home, or office, but you're connected. You're sharing the experience with, well, me and all of us here and other listeners around the state and around the world.
Right. It's really an amazing phenomenon, and we all have a lot in common. Right? That's why we're tuning in. We share these values. They bind us together. And your support helps all of us share the cost of WPR programs. That's how it works. So make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we know you value your time. We value your time, too. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a couple few minutes. Tell us your name, your contact info, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Yeah, it really just takes 2 or 3 minutes to make your gift right now, and that gift really, really helps. So take those next few minutes to support the station you count on. That's Wisconsin Public Radio. Make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking to hit our goal of 15 people giving by the end of this hour. Your gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on.
And, you know, the drive ends tomorrow, so there's not much time left to get your new WPR glass tumbler. It is going to be a nice addition to your drinkware cabinet. Ask for yours with your gift of $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you make your gift, why not become a sustaining member? It's easy to set up convenient, ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Get it all started at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Rob, we heard from Ann in Madison who says, I appreciate the great local programming WP offers, such as the Larry Mueller Show and Central Time.
Hey. So,
yeah. Hey, Ann, thank you for that support of the shows that you count on every day. And it is support from listeners like you that makes this all work. So join in with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Love to hear from you right now. You count on WPR for great conversations each and every day. We count on you to help pay for it all. Make your very important gift right now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. Now, you might have heard over the years that light to moderate alcohol consumption might offer some kind of health benefits in the long run. But A new review of research finds that probably isn't true. The review published in the JAMA Network Open looked at 107 studies of alcohol consumption and concluded that low-volume drinking did not reduce people's risk of death. And in general, it looks like it's good for our health to cut back on our drinking, whatever our starting point might be. A Wisconsin public health expert joins us now to help us make sense of the research, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the latest research on health and alcohol consumption? At some point in your life, did you drink a little more because you heard out there that it was good for you? Have you cut back on alcohol use at some point for health reasons? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Patrick Remington is a professor emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also director of the UW-Madison Preventive Medicine Residency Program. Dr. Remington, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back, Steve. Thanks. Rob, sorry.
That's okay, Dr. Remington. Did I sum up that analysis? Okay, we heard on and off, I feel like a lot back in the 90s, that, hey, it's actually healthful. It's beneficial to drink a little alcohol. Seems like this report says no.
Yeah, you summed it up perfectly. It's a large study of studies, as you pointed out. They combined many of these observational research studies, and by combining all the results, they can come up with a summary of all the sort of the best of the research studies that are out there. And what they found was no evidence that light or moderate drinking provides a health benefit. It wasn't harmful. It was about the same as not drinking at all. And it also points out that this kind of research is very complicated.
Right.
It's not an experiment where you randomly test one medicine against a placebo. It requires looking at large populations, asking surveys, questions on surveys, following people over a long period of time. And then in a most complicated way, controlling for these things we call confounders or bias to make sure that we're not, when we say that light drinking is good for you, it's not something else like exercising or a good oral hygiene or other things that light to moderate drinkers do.
One of the tricky things, it gets a bit complicated, but I think it's really important to understanding this compared to what we might have heard in the past. Some past studies looked at, okay, people who report zero drinking versus people who report light drinking, and it seemed like for some of those people with zero drinking, their health outcomes were worse. But what this new study factors in was, well, why aren't those people drinking? In some of the cases, it might have been because they had a serious health problem that led them not to drink, or they'd had a history of heavy alcohol consumption that led them not to drink. Is that one of those key confounding factors that might have led to some confusion in the past?
Yes, it is. We actually call that a source of bias. It's a relationship between the drinking pattern and some outcome like length of life or all-cause death rates. And so, yes, some people who report not drinking at all never drank in the first place, and we'd call them lifetime abstainers. But there are people who maybe drank in excess and decided to cut back or quit. And those people, the fact that they're not drinking is associated with some other health issue, like having been a heavier drinker. So this research looked at those people, looked at lifetime history, and said anybody who was a heavier drinker and cut back, we're just not going to include them in this comparison group of non-drinkers. We're going to try to really look at people who were non-drinking from the beginning and they abstained from alcohol. That's a better control or comparison group, reference group, than people who have cut back for some reason.
I want to start talking about, you know, what we can take away from all of this in our daily lives. And it seems like one key finding here is if somebody out there doesn't drink at all, and maybe it heard, again, suggestions that it might be helpful to drink, there's no health reason to go from zero to some drinking, right? There's no health benefit if I don't drink and I start drinking.
Well, yes and no. For the study, they looked at all-cause mortality. Mm-hmm. And so if you're looking to live a longer life, you certainly wouldn't go from a non-drinker to a light or moderate drinker. But if you're looking at other benefits of drinking, be it social aspects, being it's something that gives you pleasure. It may be associated with getting together with groups of people. There may be an economic benefit if you're in the restaurant or entertainment business. So, and with economic benefit, you have a job and you have income and you can be healthy. So the outcome that was studied in this research was all-cause mortality. But light drinking and moderate drinking may have other sort of social or economic benefits that weren't considered in this study.
We're talking about the latest research on the health impacts of drinking at low to moderate levels. A new analysis of the latest research says we don't live longer lives. We don't get that extended life benefit from light drinking, contrary to some past statements you may have heard. Dr. Patrick Remington stays with us, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest about this research we're talking about the connection between alcohol and health? Do you think about the health impacts from deciding how often, how much to drink? How big a factor is it for you? Have you made a conscious decision to cut back completely or a little bit? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation about new research on the health effects of drinking alcohol. A big review of the latest research. Main finding, no extended life benefits from taking up light drinking. Dr. Patrick Remington is with us, UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and he's with the Department of Population Health Sciences. You can join in if you have a question. If you're confused by research you've seen over the years, I promise you're not alone. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Remington, let's talk now about people at moderate drinking levels. First of all, when we say moderate as opposed to light drinking, can you give us a general quantity sense? What do we mean by that?
It's a very approximate measure. And again, this is self-reported. Mm-hmm. So people, we know people in surveys underreport drinking drinks that they drink. But in general, light drinking is considered to be about a drink a day. Moderate drinking is considered to be two drinks a day, and heavier drinking would be considered to be more than two drinks a day. And that's, again, very, very rough. Women, it turns out, at that level of drinking have worse health outcomes than men. So those levels are a little bit different for women. But in general, light drinking is, you know, approximately one drink per day.
This is a pretty common level of drinking, I would think, here in Wisconsin. Dr. Remington, looking at this research we're talking about and other research you've seen, what are your thoughts for somebody who says, yeah, I'm in that two drink a day-ish level on average?
Well, there's good evidence that more than two drinks a day, and again, let's emphasize that that's what you're actually drinking, maybe not what you report on a, mm-hmm. on a survey. The major finding, I should say the headline grabbing finding on this study was that light to moderate drinking is not good for you. There's no health benefits in this research. But there was just as an important finding, which is heavier drinking, more than two drinks a day, is associated with 30 to 60% increase in risk of dying of any cause. And so those increased risks from heavier drinking, although it didn't grab the headlines, mm-hmm. that's still there. So if there's one take-home message from this study, is although light to moderate drinking doesn't appear to be healthier for you regarding all-cause mortality, heavier drinking in this study was shown again to be not good for your health and increasing the risk of premature death.
So that's the state where if people are drinking in that 3+ range per day, we would see definite health, I would imagine, health benefits if they started dialing that back?
Oh, yes, no question. And there is evidence that moderate drinkers, maybe people who are now up to a couple of drinks a day, regularly, you are at risk of continuing to increase the amount you drink. So there's good evidence that cutting back to light or moderate drinking from heavier drinking leads to health benefits. There's good evidence that physicians who have a conversation with patients and ask about drinking habits can see some moderation. And again, it's the adage, all things in moderation. There's no evidence from this research that light to moderate drinking is harmful for you. Now, again, that comes with some caveats. You don't want to drink and drive. Some people who may have a history of alcohol or substance abuse in their family may want to avoid alcohol. So everybody has to make this decision individually. But I think, again, as you said in the opening, if you're drinking one to two drinks because it's good for you, it doesn't necessarily increase the length of your life. There's no evidence in this large, well-designed study of a life extending benefit.
Now, when it comes to how we actually drink in public and our kind of drinking culture in a place like Wisconsin, do you look at these levels they set and the health findings we get from a report like this and get a sense that maybe in general we need to recalibrate our thoughts on what is daily heavy drinking?
Well, absolutely. As a researcher, I've looked at patterns of drinking, and particularly being here in Madison with a college campus, you do see different patterns. For example, binge drinking is well known as a riskier pattern than having, for example, maybe one to two drinks a day regularly, and because that comes with risks of alcohol intoxication or injuries related to falls or motor vehicle crashes. So I think the good news is that light to moderate drinking, which is definitely part of the Wisconsin culture, doesn't seem to be bad for you. But you have to be careful that there aren't specific risks associated with you individually. And again, that's for every person to consider and to decide their level of drinking. But I think most people don't make the decision to drink based on extending their life. Mm-hmm. I think it's based deeply embedded in our culture and more related to our, interest in social activities and entertainment.
As we wrap up, Dr. Remington, we've been focusing on alcohol kind of in isolation, but you and I have talked a lot over the years about diseases of despair or deaths of despair. When we start to look at alcohol and depression or alcohol and other substance use, things like that. How do we start to tackle a problem that is alcohol plus something else that might put us in harm's way?
Well, there's no question that using alcohol as a treatment, as a therapeutic for problems related to mental health or depression is not good. And again, that's for individuals perhaps to have a conversation with your physician. If you feel that your use of alcohol is related to depression or not feeling well, and it's really your therapy for dealing with other things in your life, then there's clear evidence that that pattern of drinking will lead to more harms down the road. But I think the best advice is if they donate to Wisconsin Public Radio and get a tumbler, that they want to only have maybe one or maybe two drinks every day, and then the rest will benefit the public radio.
Dr. Remington, thanks. Always good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you, Rob. Thanks.
That's Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. We talked to him about the health impact of low and moderate level alcohol consumption. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. I'm Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels. Listeners, that means you provide the largest source of funding here at WPR. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you enjoy. So give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we have about half an hour left this hour. We are still looking for 12 more people to join in. And thank you to everyone who's already given.
If you haven't, give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Then your gift will fund the programs that you enjoy.
And we just heard a conversation about the health effects of light drinking. And I think we were all hoping that it was healthy. but it turns out it's not necessarily harmful, but they can't say that it's actually healthy. Super interesting topic, lots to discuss there, and these are the kinds of interesting conversations you can count on from Central Time.
WPR is listener-supported. That means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
And when you make that gift, become a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or your credit card.
A lot of people will give $10 or $20 a month. You choose whatever amount is right for you. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can count on this. Every time you tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio, you're going to learn something new. We already did this segment and all day long. And whether it's about the news of the day or a personal anecdote, history, pop culture, there is always something to spark your interest.
Listening to WPR reminds you that life is fascinating and learning makes life richer. That engagement you feel when you listen, that is worth your support. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're looking for a way to figure out how much to give, maybe a dollar a day is the right amount for your WPR listening. When you think about it, a dollar a day for your WPR listening is a great value. It's less than a cup of coffee or a soda or a day of cell phone service.
That dollar a day comes out to $30 a month, and you can set it up as a monthly transfer from your bank account or charge it to your credit card. So make your gift right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I want to make sure we get to some listener comments. Rob, we heard from Chris, a woman in her 90s, who says she's been listening to WPR for more than 80 years.
Thanks,
I
Chris.
Love that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I love that. We also heard from Mary in Madison, who says, I listen to WPR all the time. I love Central Time, especially Food Friday. Yum.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Mary. How about you? Think about what Wisconsin Public Radio means to you and then make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. The Biden administration announced last week it would begin opening remote immigration processing centers in Central and South America. The goal is to prevent illegal border crossings. We'll find out how the plan might work. First, Susanna Michaels joins me for the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
That's right. Listener support is the largest piece of the funding that makes Central Time and all the other shows that you enjoy possible. That's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Great response to that big two-day match challenge. We hit our goal earlier today on that, which is fantastic. And now we want to keep that momentum going on the second to last day of this drive, looking for 12 more people to give over the course of this hour. When you give, you're going to fund Central Time and all the other WPR programs you count on. So give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We are WPR listeners. That means that what happens in the rest of the world matters to us. What happens around the state matters to us. And that's why we have the Ideas Network here. We talk to experts all day long from all kinds of fields, from all over the state and all over the world.
We get the news from around the world to our own backyard because you value being an informed citizen. Make a gift to the station that keeps you connected at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You probably spend a few dollars a month on a TV streaming or movie subscription service. Well, think about paying for your WPR usage in that same way. After all, you tune in every day for information and entertainment.
If you've never given before, start with a gift of $10 or $20 a month. That's comparable to your Netflix or Hulu or one of the other 50 streaming services out there. And maybe it's an even better deal. It's easy to set up online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Introducing the newest addition to your drinkware collection, the WPR Glass Tumbler. Show off your support for WPR while enjoying your favorite beverage from this high-quality 11-ounce glass. Whether it's for your morning iced coffee or a relaxing nightcap, Add some elegance to the experience when you ask for your WPR glass tumbler with your gift of $12 a month or more. Here's how.
Make that gift, get that glass at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels. Your support during this spring member drive makes the WPR programs you count on possible. Your gift of 10 or 20 bucks a month, whatever amount you choose, it is the right amount to give.
And maybe you donated a few years ago and you're like, yes, I've done my part. Well, actually, it is your continued support that makes the essential news and the interesting conversations and the cultural content on WPR possible today and into the future.
If it's been a while since you donated, this would be a great time to renew at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We'll be glad to have you back on board.
And you might be wondering, how much should I give? Well, that is up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into programs that keep you informed and entertained all year long.
Make your gift right now and the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you for making an investment that serves your whole community.
And remember, we have this glass tumbler available this drive only, just today and tomorrow left to get it. It's the perfect way to enjoy your favorite beverage and share the fact that that WPR is your source for news and inspiration. Ask for your WPR tumbler when you give $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This would be a great time to become a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's easy to set up convenient ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Get it started right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I feel like people don't know that member drives are actually a super important way of hearing from new members because... you're listening to us right now. You've maybe been listening for years, and we would really appreciate your gift right now, joining the family of 50,000 members with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We really can't do it without you. Without listener members of Wisconsin Public Radio, we would not be what we are. I promise you that. Your gift added to your neighbor's gift and the person across town and around the state and put them all together, it adds up to so much of what you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's amazing the way people who have turned out to support Wisconsin Public Radio made it a reality over the years. Join that amazing tradition with your own gift. You can do it right now. It takes just a few minutes online at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A pandemic-related emergency public health order known as Title 42 has allowed the U.S. to expel migrants and asylum seekers quickly. That order is set to expire next week. The mayor of El Paso, Texas, declared a state of emergency yesterday because the end of the order is expected to lead more people to try to cross the border. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas announced a plan last week aimed at helping avoid a surge of migrants arriving at the southern border. And that plan includes new remote processing centers to be set up in Central and South America. Here's Secretary Blinken speaking last Thursday.
These centers will be operated by international organization partners and improve qualified individuals' access to accelerated refugee resettlement processing, family reunification, and labor pathways in the United States. There'll also be a referral point for lawful pathways as well as humanitarian refugee protections in other countries like Canada and Spain. These centers will take a usually important step to prevent people from making the dangerous journey to the border by providing a much safer legal option to migrate that they can pursue in and from their own countries. It's a new and innovative approach that does right by people who want to migrate and that enhances security and stability in the region.
Elise Cohen is Associate Professor of Political Science and Chair of the Public and Environmental Affairs Union at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. She studies immigration and asylum. Elise, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be with you.
I think we've talked about this concept a couple times in the past, Elise, this idea of, okay, instead of having people cross Mexico to the border, present themselves at the border, at least some people could try to apply for some kind of legal status from their home countries. Based on what we've seen in this announcement, how significant is this decision?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We have talked about this several times because what we see is this is really situated in the broader approach that's been increasing for decades now, what people that study migration policy have termed the externalization of borders. It's also been referred to as a system of remote control. And so these kinds of regional processing centers, we can understand is just another example of that broader approach, basically an effort to try and control the borders remotely by moving aspects of border control further afar. And in seeking to dissuade people from making the journey, which is exactly what we heard there in that quote you played, we can see that part of that has entailed also making the journey itself more dangerous. So more people are dying along the way, and in some cases, undergoing assaults in these countries where they are waiting to be processed.
Now, the idea, I think, is to have these centers set up in multiple countries. The only two names I've seen so far are Colombia and Guatemala, where it looks like there's an agreement with the local government there to set something like this up. How big a challenge is that to go to a country and say, yeah, we want to set up a center that helps your people leave?
Yeah, exactly. That's a really key question. And it is interesting how much multilateralism is involved in this. Like that quote you had played at the start mentioned, Canada and Spain have agreed to accept some referred as refugees. We also have to keep in mind, in addition to Colombia and Guatemala, this depends a lot on Mexico's cooperation because Mexico has to continue agreeing to take people who are being expelled previously under Title 42 and then now what will become a reversion back to Title 8, a way to sort of do expedited removals in a similar manner. And we also see Cuba. Cuba has agreed not to retaliate against deportees. So they have increased deportation flights to Cuba now, and those had actually been paused for around 3 years. So it is pretty significant how much the administration is getting cooperation from these other countries.
Now, in a sense, the Biden administration is on the clock here with the end of Title 42 next week. The anticipation, I think, from a lot of people is people are going to hear, people who want to come to the United States to claim asylum or other status are going to hear, okay, this policy is ending. We're going to see a lot more people showing up. Do you buy that premise? Is this likely to cause an influx of people trying to get into the U.S.?
Yeah, we can see that there has been an increase in the past year, like the last fiscal year was a record level of border apprehensions. We have to keep in mind many of those people were repeat crossers that were attempting to cross multiple times. But we also saw that in these first few months of the spring, there was actually a pretty significant drop in border apprehensions by around 40% less than what we were seeing at the end of the winter. So at the same time, we have to keep in mind that many of these people are pursuing this entry because there are not really formal legal pathways expanded enough at this point to give legal access to asylum or refugee resettlement. So that's the point I find really interesting is the officials are saying they are going to expand those legal pathways like refugee resettlement, but the refugee resettlement program is lagging so far behind right now what the stated ceilings are. So it is kind of a question of how credible those pledges can be.
Do you see these centers being set up in places like, again, Guatemala and Colombia, making a difference, being able to work with enough people in a persuasive way to dissuade them from instead seeking to, again, cross Mexico and enter the U.S. across the southern border? Or is this kind of a drop in the bucket?
Yeah, that is a really tough aspect of the carrot and stick approach because, with the sticks of, the harsher penalties that are being promised, potentially a 5-year ban, becoming ineligible for asylum at all if they are found to cross without authorization. In addition to those sticks, we would expect the carrot to involve something really efficient in terms of processing. But what we're seeing with the CBP One app, which is part of this regional processing, that they should make appointments on this mobile phone app, is that it's really backlogged. And as soon as somebody starts trying to schedule an appointment, they find that appointment can be gone within minutes of being on the app. So we're not really seeing the resources and staffing and even just like technical support around this adequate enough that we would expect migrants to feel this is really going to be, a safe and efficient way for me to find refuge.
Talking to Elise Cohen from UW Green Bay about changes in the Biden administration approach to immigration, especially at the southern border. Elise, let's talk about asylum status. I think we talk in terms of people entering the country under some kind of legal status or entering the country illegally. But there are legal frameworks, there are legal guidelines that allow people without a pre-existing status to present themselves and request asylum status. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think it gets lost sometimes in the shuffle when we talk about it.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's so confusing and it's so complex, but asylum is really something reserved for people that are fleeing political persecution or fleeing situations of torture and harm where their life is under threat. And other forms of migration might not be forced in that same manner. You know, we might think of people migrating for economic reasons or family reunification, but asylum really is supposed to be something kind of set aside for those specific criteria. What we see with the rapid expulsion that's been happening under Title 42, and which is going to sort of morph into expedited removal under Title 8 within a few weeks here, is we still see a violation of the principle of non-refoulement in asylum law and refugee policy. And that's basically a prohibition on returning people who fear for their safety back to a territory where they might face harm or persecution. And so that's a big concern around the stick aspect of the carrot and stick approach, is a lot of these people that will be expelled are going to be blocked from their legal access to asylum and sent back to a territory where their life is under threat.
Elise, as we watch where people are coming to the United States from, this changes, of course, over the years. What countries do we have our eye on for the most part right now?
Yeah, that's another really key aspect of some major transformations. It used to be that we were focused on a lot of people from Mexico and just the Central American so-called Northern Triangle countries. But we see now there are also a lot more people from Venezuela and Cuba because of the level of crises that are going on in those countries. And so that's a major change. It's not only Salvadorans, Guatemalans, Hondurans, but also Venezuelans and Cubans and Haitians as well.
And something that strikes me when I see lists of where these centers, these remote application centers we started talking about, countries not on the list, El Salvador, Honduras, Venezuela, Cuba, and Haiti. As of now, I don't think that they are on the table. Maybe that's in the future. Is that significant that we won't see these centers, or if we don't see these centers set up in those countries?
Yes, absolutely. It underscores that we have to revisit the question of whether these places are safe places for migrants who are seeking asylum. And certainly for Guatemala and Colombia, you can make a strong case that many people there will have their life endangered if they are forced to remain there for, it could be several years while they're awaiting their asylum adjudication that's happening remotely. And then listeners may remember, you know, just a few weeks back, there was this devastating fire in Ciudad Juarez in Mexico that killed over 40 migrants at a migrant center there. So, you know, these conditions are not necessarily safe in these other countries for people being forced to remain there.
Are there more fundamental changes, Elise, that you think should at least be considered by Congress when it comes to our immigration and border security system?
Yes, that is the million-dollar question and something the Biden administration officials keep pointing back at, that there really is not movement on meaningful immigration reform from Congress. And that's sort of the justification for why the administration needs to take so many of these executive kinds of decisions and actions. And what we see with the political polarization as deep as it is today is there's just a lack of compromise over basic things that could create more legal pathways for these people. But we just aren't able to find that common ground right now between Republicans and Democrats to make the legislation happen.
It's just over a week until Title 42 expires. What are you watching for, especially toward the end of next week, Elise?
Yeah, I'm watching for a couple of things. For example, there is a lawsuit right now that was brought by a group of Republican attorney generals, and they're challenging the Biden administration's use of executive authority in general to do things like expand these legal pathways, like humanitarian parole. So the trial is scheduled for June, and so listeners might just want to check that out next month to see what's happening with that lawsuit, and then to see, are we going to actually have an increase in refugee resettlement through the formal legal channels, not just the ceilings, but actual admissions of refugees? Will the administration follow through on that pledge?
Elise, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you so much, Rob.
That's Elise Cohen, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Green Bay. She joined us for a look at Biden administration plans for new remote processing centers for migrants seeking to enter the U.S. Those would be set up in Central and South American countries. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. Susanna Michaels is in the studio with me. Your gift right now is so important, and that's because gifts from people like you are the largest source of funding for all your favorite WPR programs. Central Time and all the shows you enjoy, they're possible thanks to your support. So give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we have just a few minutes left this hour, and we are looking for your gift. Your gift right now is so important because when you give, you support the programs you rely on every day, like Central Time.
Thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In the last segment, we learned about the new twists and turns in the migration and asylum story, and we heard from an expert right here in Wisconsin. Central Time covers a lot of ground every day, day after day.
And WPR is listener-supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes that and the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift.
And this member drive, you can toast to WPR with your new tumbler. It's an elegant glass that features a sound wave design and a shout out to your favorite station. Ask for yours when you give $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm Marielle Segarra, the host of NPR's Life Kit. It's our job to find experts and share their takeaways to help you with, well, anything.
We found someone who told us about a technique that actually involves doodling your dread.
It's not about them being steps upwards or stages or boxes to check.
Pizza does reheat well. Just put it into the skillet and just kind of crisp up the bottom. And it's kind of like you just got it brand new. Just cover it up, some melted cheese, and it's actually pretty dope.
If you've changed a behavior, formed a positive habit, or approached a problem differently because of something you've heard on this station, make a donation today.
Make that donation online at WPR.org. Takes just a few minutes. Or make a quick call to 888-202-2552 to make your gift during the spring member drive. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels. The WPR programs you enjoy are all possible thanks to your support. Your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose makes a difference for our entire community.
You know, every drive we hear from first-time donors who are giving because they've gotten their first job out of college or they've turned 30 and they've realized, hey, it's time for me to give to WPR.
Giving money to something you believe in, a service you count on, it's a great way to mark an important transition in your life. We encourage it. Now, a lot of first-time donors will give maybe $10 a month or $20 a month, but you choose the amount that's right for you. And then go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And after you've made that donation to WPR, you can make your gift go even further by telling your friends and family.
Whether you use social media, call them up, mention it when you see them, let them know that you support a news, talk, and music on WPR. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and then inspire the other WPR fans in your life to do the same.
And we are still looking for your gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on.
Ooh, just got a few gifts since we started talking. That's fantastic. Let's keep it going. Your gift today will help us hit our goal this hour, and it'll ensure a bright future for the programs you count on. Get online at WPR.org or pick up the phone and call 888-202-2552.
And we have that glass tumbler. When you make a gift of $12 a month or more in support of WPR programs, it's an elegant glass and it will be a daily reminder of how much you value WPR. Ask for yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Mary in Appleton says, I love the news. talk and sense of community that WPR gives. It's on all day in my home and my car. Mary, thank you so much for giving. Really do appreciate it. I also love that sense of community. I know usually I'm, standing in a room by myself doing this show, but I know that you're out there listening, that I'm part of this community of people tackling sometimes complicated subjects all together. It's a great feeling to be part of that. And you can support these conversations, that sense of community, with your gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And Wisconsin Public Radio is the oldest public radio station in the nation. I'm so proud of that. And we heard we heard from a woman named Chris in her 90s who's been listening for about more than 80 years. And I realize that's nearly the entire history of WPR. And I love that long-term listening to WPR, the intergenerational listening. And it's all possible because of listener support. I have to bring it back to that. Join in with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You count on us for great conversations each and every day here on the Ideas Network. We count on you to help pay for it. Join the team at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.